Now let me go on to one more question of association. That is a question of patterns. Now you know what I mean by patterns. There are patterns of all kinds. But here I am talking more particularly about verb patterns. When your pupils learn a verb, they must not learn only the meaning. They must learn how to use that verb correctly in accordance with English usage in a sentence. Now I'm going to take a group of verbs that use the same pattern. Give, lend, show. Those three verbs are enough. Now you know that we can say, please show me your book, or please lend me your pen, or please give me a pencil. Now that is a very simple pattern. You have the verb followed by a pronoun, me, followed by a noun. Give me your pen, lend me your pencil, show me your book. But you know also that we can say, please show your book to the boy who is sitting behind you. Or please lend your pencil to the girl who is sitting at the end of the row. Now what is the difference? In the second pattern we have the preposition to. Please lend your pencil to the boy who is sitting at the end of the row. Now what is the difference between the two patterns? Well, listen to the two examples again. Please give me your book. Please give your book to the boy sitting behind you. In both cases, the object of the verb give was book. But in the first case, we had the pronoun me, give me your book. And in the second sentence, we had give your book to the boy who is sitting behind you. Now, just think of those two words, me, the pronoun me, very short. The boy who is sitting behind you, rather long, isn't it? That is the difference. That is the difference between the two patterns. And you will find that in English, again and again, when there are two objects, you can call them direct object, indirect object, or direct object and prepositional object, any grammatical term you like, that is not important. When you have two objects of that kind, we tend to put the longer and the heavier object at the end. I didn't say it was a rule. I said we tend to do that. There is a tendency. I never say it is a rule that. And no teacher should say it is a rule that when they are talking about English. Avoid using the word rule. Pupils like to say, what is the rule, please? But the answer is there is no rule. There is only a tendency. Don't use the word rule. It is very dangerous. If you use the word rule and give a rule, next day the boy or the girl will come along, please teach it. Is this an exception? He will always find an exception. So say there is a tendency, or say in many cases, or in most cases, something like that. Well, that is what I would that is how I would explain these two sentences. We put the heavier or longer object at the end. Well, now, your pupils must learn to use the verbs give and show and lend and other verbs in those two patterns in the correct way. And again, you must help your pupils by giving them oral work. You can say, please give me your book. Thank you. Now, please give the book to the boy sitting in the back row. Thank you. Please show me your pencil. Thank you. Now please show your pencil to the boy sitting in the corner. And they will hear examples of that kind. And they will tend to associate the two patterns with the way in which they are used, with the longer object coming second. Now there is no reason at all why you should not tell them something about that in Japanese after they have heard examples. But always remember, examples first. And then, if you wish, a short talk in Japanese to explain the two kinds of pattern. And you can give them a simple example of this kind. Give me your book. Give me your book. And then say, Give your book to me, please. Give your book to me, please. Now, what is the difference? In the second sentence, I said, give your book to me, please. And I put a strong stress on the pronoun me, and I used a falling tone, give your book to me. Because I stressed the pronoun, it comes last, give your book to me. But if the pronoun me is unstressed, I say, give me your book, give me your book. Well, you see, that is the general way in which these two patterns are used. The longer or the heavier or the more emphatic object comes last. And you will find it again and again in English. You say, he gave his money away. He gave his money away. But he gave away every penny he had. He gave away every penny he had. Every penny he had. Every penny he had. Four words. In that case, they come after the adverb away. He gave away every penny he had, but he gave his money away. His money, short, it comes before the adverb. He took his hat off. He took his hat off. The adverb comes last. He took off his dirty shoes and his wet raincoat. His dirty shoes and his wet raincoat, quite a long object. It comes after the adverb. He took off his wet raincoat and his dirty shoes. He took his hat off. His hat, short. Don't drop the baby. Don't drop the baby. Now, compare that with, he let fall a hint of his intentions. He let fall a hint of his intentions. A hint of his intentions is a long phrase. Use a pronoun. Don't let it fall. Don't let the baby fall. Don't let the baby fall. Don't let it fall. He let fall a hint of his intentions. It fall a hint of his intentions. That's another example. You can find dozens and dozens of examples of that general tendency to place a long object at the end of the sentence. Don't make it a rule, but it is a tendency. And you can help your pupils to form the right kind of associations by giving them examples. And when you do that, in this case, you are doing quite advanced work. You are beginning to teach literary style. You are not teaching elementary English only, you are beginning to teach literary style. When your pupils begin to read Johnson, well, they will find that one of the principles of Johnson's style is balance, isn't it? Balance sentences. Well, you have examples of it, the question of balance. It's a question of where you put the weight, the heavier part of the sentence. And so although you are teaching a point of syntax, you are at the same time beginning the teaching of literary style. It can be used as a point of reference for style in writing. Well, now, another case of patterns. Associating a verb with its preposition. Many of your pupils have notebooks, or perhaps they call them workbooks. And when they learn a new word, they perhaps have a habit of writing down the English word and then the Japanese equivalent of that verb, the kanji, or whatever it might be. Now, suppose that they have a verb like succeed. And in their notebooks, they write the English verb succeed and then the Japanese verb. Is that much use to them? No, that is not much use. They have learnt or noted in their books only the meaning. They must write down in their books the pattern in which that verb is used, and they must write succeed in. They must learn the preposition with the verb. Suppose that you don't teach them in that way, what will happen? They will make a sentence like, I think I shall succeed to pass the examination, which is not English. Why do they make the mistake? Because you didn't help them enough. The teacher didn't help enough. When you are teaching, you must teach verbs in their patterns. And for the verb succeed, you must give examples. they succeeded in climbing the mountain, or he succeeded in passing the examination. And that is true not only of verbs, but also of nouns and adjectives. For example, success in the examination. His success in the examination delighted his parents. Or he was successful in the examination. Succeed, success, successful, all of these words must be associated with the preposition in. Prepositions are full of difficulty. Many big books have been written about English prepositions. But the only way to master them is to learn them in association with nouns, adjectives, and verbs. You can't learn prepositions in isolation. When you learn the word duty, well, you learn on duty and off duty. And your pupils must not write the word duty in their workbooks by itself. It is much better for them to write a complete sentence. A policeman went on duty at 8 o'clock and came off duty at 6 o'clock. That is how you can help them. Then they form the right kind of association between the preposition and the noun. So you see, the teacher has this duty of helping his pupils not just to learn words, but to learn words with the right associations. They must learn how to use the words in sentences. Now, let me go back to a question of stress. I haven't talked very much about stress in English yet. Stress, what kind of associations come in here? Well, the placing of stress is a kind of signal. It is also a signal in language. Listen to these words. Bus driver, bus driver. How did I place my stresses there? There was a stress on bus, wasn't there? Bus. And there was no stress on the second element. I didn't say a bus driver, I said a bus driver. A bus driver. Shoemaker. Shoemaker. Again, there was a stress on the word shoe, but no stress on the word maker. A person who does something. A stress on the first element. Bus driver, a man who drives a bus. Shoemaker, a man who makes shoes. Now listen to this one. A woman driver. A woman driver. Did you hear the difference? In woman driver, there were two stresses, weren't there? I didn't say a woman driver. If I said woman driver, it would mean a man who drives women. Perhaps a very hard-hearted husband who makes his wife work hard all day. She could be a woman driver. But I said a woman driver, two stresses. Now that means a woman who is a driver. A woman driver. We can say, do you think women drivers are more reckless than men drivers? That's an example of how we might use it. Do you think women drivers cause many accidents in the streets? Women drivers. Now, what is the difference? Well, if I use two stresses, it is a signal that my meaning is different from when I use one stress. If I use a single stress, a bus driver, it means a person who does something. And if I use two stresses, a woman driver, it means a person who is something quite different. A woman driver, a woman who is a driver of a car. So you see, that question of stress is used as a signal, just as the question of inversion of subject and finite is a signal of a question. So there again, you as a teacher have to help your pupils to form the right kind of association. Another example, a silver box, a silver box. How many stresses? Two. A silver box. Now, silver polish. Silver polish. Not silver polish, but silver polish. One stress. That is, again, is a signal of a difference in meaning. If there are two stresses, it means this made of that. A silver box a box made of silver. Silver polish. Polish which is used for silver. Not polish made of silver, that has no meaning. Silver polish. Shoe polish. Boot polish. Shoe polish. Polish used for shoes. Now you see, there is an example of stress used as a signal. Now your pupils have to learn these things, and they have to associate this question of one stress or two stresses with the meaning. Stress can be a signal of meaning, and it is the business of the teacher again to help pupils to form the right kind of association. After they have formed the associations, you can give them information, if you like, in Japanese. But information only is not enough. If you learn about the language, you will not be able to use it. You can use a language only by using it. You can study all the grammars there are. You can study all the books on phonetics and intonation there are. I'm sure your library has hundreds and hundreds of them, very good ones. But learning about the language does not help you to use it. If you want to be successful in language, you must use it, use it, use it all the time. And oral work helps you to use it more rapidly than written work. Written work is important, that comes afterwards. But the foundation is laid through oral work in the first year or two, and that is where the most important work is done. If you are teaching in the beginning stage, you are doing the far more important work than the teachers in the university, even though you are paid less. Your work is far more important. So you have to help your pupils to form these associations. And one more point, and then I must finish. It is important for your pupils to learn the values of words in style. Do you know what I mean by stylistic values of words? Let me take examples with small and little. When you talk about the letters of the alphabet, you describe them as small letters or capital letters, don't you? You never say little letters, small letters. I might say, my friend Smith has three small children. Three small children, not three little children, but three small children. If I want to live in Tokyo, I might say, where can I find a small house? I'd like a small house. I use the word small. Now, when do I use the word little? What is the difference? I might say, my friend Smith has three nice little children, or three charming little children, or three nasty little children, or three noisy little children. Or I might say, that's a nice little house, or that house has a charming little garden. Do you notice the difference? When I use the word little, I use it with another adjective, a nice little, a charming little, a naughty little, pretty little, a pretty little garden. Now the explanation is simple enough. The word little is usually associated with something emotional. Small is quite colorless, no emotion at all. A small house, a small child, and so on. No emotion involved, nothing emotive in it. But when we use the word little, it is usually associated with some kind of feeling, some emotion. And that is why we usually find it used in conjunction with another adjective. A charming little garden, a nice little boy, a pretty little wife, and so on. Now there is an example, and I have only time for one example, of stylistic values. Your pupils might think that small and little are exactly the same. They're not. They're not the same. There is a stylistic difference. Don't give your pupils synonyms. Don't say small means little. It doesn't. There's a difference between them. There are very few true synonyms in English. And again, it is your business. What a great responsibility you have. It's frightful, isn't it? What a great responsibility you have. You must help your pupils to understand all these things while they are in the early stages, that they must form the association between small and its meaning and the idea of colorless English, and little and the idea of emotion, some kind of feeling. So you have to help them when you choose your textbooks, for example. If you find that the word little comes without any other adjective, a little house, well, that's not very good. It should be nice little house, or pretty little house, or charming little house. There are many things of that kind which are quite important, and they are all questions of association, forming the right association. Well, this all may sound rather too difficult for you, I don't know. It means a lot of work, a lot of preparation, but it is worth doing. You, as a teacher, have to know a good deal about English. You have to learn about the language, you have to learn about the grammar, the intonation, stress, structures, all sorts of things, stylistic values of words. But don't teach those things to your pupils as a subject. You have to know them in order that you may give the right kind of model to your pupils. And you give it through intensive oral work during the first 2 or 3 years. And if you are successful in that, your pupils will go on and will learn English very much better and will, I am sure, have a much greater chance of success when they come to the entrance examination. So thank you very much.